You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The Athletic.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
It's the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham SC. My name's Sammy James and welcome to the show today, brought to you by The Athletic UK. And it's a bit of a stripped down Thursday club, first of all because it's on a Wednesday, second of all because we don't have Jack Collins, but we do have Fulham's writer for The Athletic, Peter Rutzler. Peter, how you doing?
I'm doing okay, thank you, Sammy. How are you doing?
Yeah, fine, thank you. A bit perked up after yesterday's results. So in this episode, we're going to look back at Fulham's 1-1 draw at Old Trafford. A baffling lineup from Scott Parker, which somehow worked. Fulham getting a point and potentially could have got more than a point if VAR had actually been able to do its job. So we're going to look back at what was a dead rubber, but an enjoyable dead rubber at Old Trafford, and also get Peter's view on everything that's been happening off the field. Scott Parker versus the hierarchy has kicked off in the last few days, basically kicked off in the hours preceding our last podcast with Peter, so there's a lot to catch up with him. And I guess we'll look ahead to the Newcastle game, probably most notable for the return of fans to Craven Cottage. Let's do some three-word reviews before we get into it. Some great ones here. First one from PFFC11, which was weird team worked. Fully agree there. I think you'll like this one, Peter. Patrick Brown says, strife of Brian.
Very good.
I thought it was excellent. Fulham FC Asia says, brilliant Bristol boys. Yes, of course, Decker Dover Reed and Joe Bryan linking up at Old Trafford at the Stretford end. Iconic stuff. And then finally, I'm sure this will be the pod name as well. I reckon this has been the pod name before, but it worked perfectly. Jack Taplin, Theatre of Reams.
Yes, very nice.
120 likes on the reply there for Jack Taplin. So had to be done. I'm sure back in the archives, we must have called one Theatre of Reams before, but it worked perfectly in the scenario. So well done, Jack, a worthy pod name. And yeah, Peter, let's get your reaction to the draw yesterday. Fully unexpected. I kept a bit of a low profile on Twitter because I very much went on the rampage beforehand saying that we were going to lose 8-0. That is definitely not what happened. Although I feel like, can you blame me for thinking that was going to happen?
Yeah, it was when the lineup dropped, there was fair bit of shock, I think. I mean, Scott Parker had sort of hinted that he would make changes looking to next year, but I still think it was a surprise to see the team that he put out. You know, I think Tim Ream's inclusion, his first start since October. Obviously, Joe Bryan come back in. I don't think there was as much surprise about that, considering how he performed at Southampton. But yeah, I mean, you factor in the fact that Alexander Mitrovic wasn't in the squad. You know, Mara Lamina then started at centre-half in the early stages before Harrison Reed picked up that injury. It was, there was a little bit of concern, but actually the team performed really, really well. I think defensively were pretty solid and especially in the second half had much more of an attacking threat. And in fairness to Ream, you know, he hasn't played so long, doesn't have match game time under his belt, but, you know, I thought he was excellent, absolutely outstanding. So, and the same goes for Brian, and who picked up a goal in the second half.
Do we think that's potentially a nod to next season? I saw that you tweeted about 10 minutes before the podcast, a lot of people getting confused thinking that Tim Ream was out of contract this summer, and it turns out he isn't.
No, he's not out of contract. I myself thought he was out of contract as well, but he signed an extension at the same time as Joe Bryan did last summer. So his deal now runs until 2022. So yeah, it wasn't a strange one. It wasn't some kind of, you know, Tim Ream bowing out with some games. It was very much a case, as Parker has said, of looking to next season and trying to pivot to those contracted players. I think one of the sort of big discussion points was about why some loanee players played and why others didn't. Parker said that was because it was a balance. I think Amarit Rodek's been unlucky. I know Alphonse Areola's been excellent. And, you know, when you see the way he performed at Old Trafford last night, and you do think, well, it's understandable. And he's very, very unlucky to miss out on the France squad too, actually. But yeah, I mean, you know, all told, it was a lineup that sort of came together and performed really, really well.
Yeah, it did as well. And maybe we're all guilty of knocking Tim Ream a bit. I'm definitely guilty. I think I need to go on the record and, you know, scale back some of the tweets that I did last night when I saw his inclusion. It reminded you that, okay, the pace is gone with Ream. And I think if we started Ream for 38 games this season, I think we would have conceded a lot more goals than we have. But also, like, his positional sense on a field has never been in doubt, and I guess proved a bit of his quality as well. And I enjoyed that from Ream. And I think he stuck one up to a few of the naysayers who probably have been on his back and saying that he isn't Premier League level. I still don't think he is, but I think maybe he proved that he's not quite as bad as maybe we've made him out to be.
I think with Ream as well, he hasn't really been given that much of a shot at the Premier League in his two stints. I know, obviously, at the start of the season, it was very, very difficult. But, you know, I think back to the Wolves game at Molineux where he came in, and it was just before Fulham recruited Tosin Adrabayo and Joachim Andersson and Terence Kongolo as well. And he played very, very well in defence alongside Maxime Lamarchand. And I just wonder if in a back three, it actually suits him a little bit. You know, he has that space on the left side, has the support of Tosin Adrabayo, who seemed to clear every header yesterday. And that was quite a nice sort of balance. And of course, you know, what he's renowned for is also his ability on the ball and to progress it from the back. And you think to Slavisa Jokanovic's playoff winning side and how important he was that year. And he's a different player now. Of course he is. He's 33, but there's certainly a role to play there, and certainly has experience. And of course, on an international level. And also alongside, you know, Anthony Robinson, obviously he's injured at the moment with an ankle knock, but, you know, both international teammates, Anthony Robinson, spoken about how Ream was important for him signing at Fulham. And, you know, I think yesterday we could see that the quality is there, and maybe the reflections have been harsh because, you know, Fulham's defensive record in 18-19 wasn't great in the Premier League, but that said, you know, I wouldn't say Ream has had the longest of shots.
No, I guess not. And there was nothing the defence really could have done about the opening goal. On one hand, I want to talk about, like, what an amazing goal that was. Like, sometimes you have to take away the tribal allegiances and just applaud what was an unbelievable finish from an unbelievable player. But also, it shouldn't have stood, Peter. So,
yeah.
Kind of a hard one to swallow, really, because if that happens against Man United, I know this is a really kind of basic football fan thing to say, but I think VAR gives that a longer look and double checks. And it's quite clear that Bruno Fernandes does not get a flick on the ball, and therefore Cavani's not just off, like, not fractions offside, he's miles offside.
Yeah, and I think what was particularly grating is that when Joe Bryan scored, VAR really tried hard to rule that out. I mean, there was a really long check, and to be honest, on first glance, it looked like Bobby Decker-Dover-Reed on the far side was onside anyway. But, I mean, there were some shoulders being checked and everything else. But, you know, the Cavani's goal didn't have a long check by what I can recall anyway. And as you say, Fernandes doesn't seem to touch the ball. I mean, it doesn't deviate. I mean, the one argument you could say is it overly clear and obvious? Can you be absolutely certain? You know, it doesn't seem like he touches it. I think originally the assist was given to De Gea, and then that was sort of, like, you know, hastily changed to reflect the fact that Fernandes had supposedly touched it. So, I mean, but in terms of the quality of the goal, I mean, it was absolutely fantastic. You know, to score that goal at Old Trafford when fans have returned, you know, it was, yeah, you can't not acknowledge the quality, really. I mean, Areola will probably not be particularly happy about it, and neither will the Fulham defence, considering how high up the field they were and the gap that emerged behind Tosin when he goes to press Fernandes. But in terms of the technique and you know, having the balls to do that in that situation, I mean, you're through on goal, really. I mean, you could just run in and chip it over the keeper, but he's gone from range and he's pulled it off. And it was, yeah, it was absolutely stunning.
I think what annoyed me slightly was I was listening to Five Live at that point because I was in the car, and the Five Live commentary team were up in arms that VAR was even checking it because it was such a beautiful goal and such an iconic moment. And I'm thinking, Matt, like, look, I don't like marginal VAR offside decisions, barring the cup final. I enjoyed that one on Saturday. But let's not just suddenly like change the rules because it was a nice goal and because it was the return of fans at Old Trafford. Like, let's be consistent over a season. I was just a bit taken aback. They had to sheepishly say 5-10 minutes later, yeah, we think he might have actually got that one wrong. I was like, yes. Well, I had no idea in the time because I was in a car, but I also just was a bit taken aback why they were so shocked that VAR might have a look at the decision. But then after their piece, you expected the floodgates to open and they very much didn't. And as much as Joe Bryan's goal at the end was important, I think the fact that Fulham then didn't go on to disgrace them themselves, and you would have forgiven Fulham for that turning ugly. Like, that is the situation, a goal after 15 minutes, the return of fans at Old Trafford, a makeshift squad. It had all of the ingredients of United going on and winning that 6-7-0, and that's what they've been capable of, especially in the last couple of months. Look at Roma in the Europa League semi-finals.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I just think to the Southampton game where I don't know. I mean, I was at St Mary's for that one and it just felt like the body language was a bit flat. It just, I mean, apart from Fabio Cavallo, I think in his two appearances has been excellent. We can talk about him in a minute. But, it just, after the first goal for Saints, they sort of dropped off a little bit. And it just, you know, there was just wasn't that impetus, and which you kind of understand. And obviously, you know, it's not what supporters want. It's not what everyone wants to see when the team are relegated, and it's you're looking for some kind of positivity. But with confidence low, you can sort of make that you can understand it. But then, you know, I think as you say, Sammy, you know, to do that Old Trafford in front of supporters, I think everyone sort of expected United to just sort of push Fulham aside by at that point. I do think United didn't really step out of second or third gear at all. I don't think they had the same urgency to do that. It did sort of have, I wouldn't say a friendly tempo to it, but it wasn't a sort of do or die tempo to the game. And I think that's not a surprise when, you know, United's season in the league is wrapped up and so is Fulham's. But that said, you know, even going back to the offside call, you know, these matches still do matter. You know, it is still important that Fulham finish 18th over 19th. It seems a bit silly to say it, but there's a couple of million pounds on the line there in merit payments. You know, if we judge from the 18-19 awards, I don't know what it will be for this year, but it will be around that ballpark, which is a fair bit of money, particularly when, you know, when we've talked about financial fair play and things like that.
Yeah.
And then the players too are playing for futures, whether that be at Fulham or elsewhere. So there is something riding on it. And, either way, I think the performance from Fulham defensively was very, very good. I thought Lamina was excellent. You know, he did well, I think, when he went in at centre-half against Burnley. But even when he stepped into midfield against United, you know, his energy was really, really important. And as a team, I felt Fulham performed very well.
Yeah, and obviously Carvalho had his chance through on goal, well saved by De Gea. I was sad for him then, although I don't know if I quite could have dealt with the hype of Carvalho 2 from 2. It would have been, I think you could have forgiven everyone for being Ryan Sessegnon Mark 2 if he suddenly scores in his first two Premier League games. But he was impressive again. And I've seen a few people tweeting this morning that actually, maybe in hindsight and with the benefit of hindsight, he could have actually warranted his shot earlier in the season. Because he has proved himself. I can see why Scott Parker didn't do it, but also I think he's starting to prove that he's not just there, I don't know, to inflate a transfer fee like Harvey Elliott. He's not just there so that we can have some nice stats on the wall about our youth players actually getting into the team this season. He is fully there on merit, isn't he?
Yeah, he's clearly got quality. And I think you're right. I mean, let's make sure he doesn't score too many goals until he gets that contract signed. And is very much part of the furniture. Let's keep the hype to a minimum, I think. But I think you are right. I think hindsight obviously is a wonderful thing. And considering where Fulham were on the table, considering the type of games he's come into, I think that's also worth considering. You know, he's played games that are dead rubbers. I mean, apart from the Chelsea game where he came off the bench, it's, you know, there's a very different dynamic to those matches where everything is on the line, literally everything, futures, the club's survival. It's a different thing. And I think actually easing him in at this point is helpful. It takes, there's no outside other pressure that he has to concern himself about. The only thing he has to worry about really is making sure that he's making an impression, really. And he did that. I mean, his qualities, undoubted. I think he was very unlucky with his finish. I think maybe it might have been a rush of blood to the head, but his first touch was excellent. Takes him away from the defender, opens his body out, and he's tried to take it early, but just doesn't get the distance away from David De Gea that he needed. But I mean, you only have to see his goal he scored at Southampton, the composure in that situation. How many times have we seen Fulham players get into that sort of position and pass up the opportunity? You know, Fulham will only get one or two of those a game, and I mean, there's so many what ifs. Could probably do a whole podcast on it, Sammy. So, but to see a young player come through and to have that attacking influence, it's been really, really, really encouraging. I against Southampton, I think, because he started out wide, and I think he took a few hits, one off Mohamed Salisu and another off I think Yannick Vestergaard, was it Jan Bednarek? I can't remember. And because he's so small and so slight, you just think, my God, is he going to be okay here? He's just going to get absolutely pillared to post. But he adapted. Technically, you can see the quality. You can see why he's been training with the first team for the last few months. I think there may be an element of that. There may be an element of making sure he's up to speed, that he's competing. And Barker sort of referenced when asked about why he's come in now, saying that he sort of made that transition from just being in training to actually making a mark and saying, look, I can play these games. I should be in your starting lineup. And I think it's a little bit ahead of schedule. I don't think Fulham were probably looking to sort of give him the starts that he's had at this point. I think relegation's obviously helped. But I think I did a piece earlier in the season where they've been not sure about how to use him because of his style of play. Does he go on loan? And it was felt that keeping him in that first team environment and pushing him that way would be the best way to progress. And he's clearly, you know, exceeded those sort of timeframes of building towards next year's pre-season and is now firmly in the first team picture. And that's such an encouraging thing. And I think right now, amid everything else, that's a really nice thing for Fulham fans to cling on to.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's been a real ray of sunshine kind of in what's been a pretty gloomy time to support the club. And another thing that was a bit of a ray of sunshine was that goal. Deca Dover-Reed to Joe Bryan, as I mentioned in the intro, the Bristol boys, they've been playing since they were kids. And for them to link up for a goal like that at the Stretford End with fans was a nice moment. Joe Bryan's first goal since those goals at Wembley in the playoff final. It was a good cross by Deca Dover-Reed. And Joe Bryan took it well. I think that's all you can really say about it. But it was just a nice moment. And for Fulham fans, and certainly this is what I felt, just something to clench your fist at, to go, yes, get in. That is something, because it's been such a miserable couple of months for Fulham. And actually, yes, it didn't matter. It's all futile and pointless, although maybe the race for 18th is slightly helped through it. But I think that's the main thing I'll take away with it. It brought a smile to my face, and I feel like I haven't had many of those watching football for a number of weeks now.
That's Joe Bryan as well. I think, you know, I sort of wrote about that today because obviously he's the reminder of Wembley, but, you know, in terms of his personality and, you know, how he spoke after the game, there he is speaking to Jeff Shreves, blood pouring down his arm because of a slight knock, and he speaks very well, and I think there is that just having him back in the picture and having him scoring, it's just, I don't know, it just felt quite positive. It felt like a nice change in tone, really, and I thought he played very well. You know, I touched on earlier about how he played at Southampton. You know, he is a really attacking wing back, and I think when he has more license to get forward with that sort of insurance with a free at the back behind him, he can play very, very well. You know, we saw how important he was for Alexander Mitrovic last season, and the goals he scored. I thought he linked up really nicely with Ademola Lookman. A couple of times they sort of made inroads down that side, and his goal is about anticipation. It's wanting to get into the box. You know, it's a great play from Deca Dover-Reed. It was actually a really good team goal. Worked from the back, worked through the phases. Deca Dover-Reed gets wide and then whips in the cross, and you need bodies in the box, and that's where Bryan was. And it's been a difficult season for him, and he's one of those players where you think, well, he hasn't really done much wrong. I know there's been sort of, you know, concerns about him from the defensive side, the Premier League, but it's not necessarily been the case that he's had the chance to sort of disprove that. Anthony Robinson's done well. I think he's improved over the season, without doubt. And but you know, you do wonder maybe if Brian could have had more of a role, particularly in terms of his ability from dead balls situations too. Fulham haven't scored enough from those scenarios. And I think if we detach from hindsight, it was quite a nice moment, and it sort of rounded up what was a positive game. You know, it was a game that sort of reminded everyone of Fulham's results at Anfield, of Goodison Park, at the King Power Stadium. You know, the more positive aspects to the season, and also how it started and to sort of end with Brian scoring was almost end anyway. Was nice to see.
Yeah, I mean, do you see a future for Joe Brian next season? Because if I was Joe Brian and kind of progressing with his career how he is, he's another one on that pile of players who must be thinking, what's my future here? Because I might play in the Championship next season, but am I just going to be dropped again when I come up to the Premier League? He must be one having a bit of a real thought about where his future lies and what's best for his career at this point, because he's not now at an age where he can afford to lose 2 years again, chasing an ambition that may not happen for him.
Yeah, I think if I'm Joe Brian, that's probably the thinking. You know, is that the scenario that he wants? Is it going to be another season? He will have Anthony Robinson to compete with as well. Do you want to take that line again and then know that when you get to the Premier League, you may not play? I think it's a difficult one, because then at the same time, you're playing with an upwardly mobile Fulham team who want to get back into the Premier League. And it's a difficult one. I think his contract runs out in 2 years' time. I think he signed an extension in the summer, last summer. So it's a difficult one for him, I think. I don't think it's an easy one, but you know, in terms of his character, you don't get it. He won't be the kind of player to kick up a fuss. I think what's been quite nice actually is how involved he's still been with the team. I think Anthony Robinson spoken really warmly about how much he's helped him this year off the field, little bits of advice. Sometimes you see him at halftime, Brian, you know, when the subs are warming up and the players are coming back out for the second half, he'll go up to Robinson and they'll have a chat and he'll exchange some pointers and whatever. And Brian's the kind of character who will go around to all of the teammates and just G him up for the second half. And he's a really positive influence, I think. And I think Fulham would want to keep him in that side. But from his own perspective, I think, you know, you probably do need to assess where you want to go and what, you know, what direction he wants to travel in.
Yeah, I mean, 27 years old, 28 in September. So definitely getting to that point of his career where he surely will be having to think about what's next. I mean, Adam, who was running the Fulhamish Twitter last night, did a tweet that did quite well, saying, "Restarting the Joe Brian left wing brigade, please join." And I've always thought that it could be an option and you potentially could try and incorporate Brian and Robinson in the same team. And I don't think it would be a completely nuts thing. We all saw Joe Brian's assist record from last year. And I think it definitely could work. Peter, a quick word on Mitrovic, not in the side at all. Although Parker did say it was because of an injury. Do we believe him?
Well, I guess, yeah, I mean, I've not heard anything to the contrary on that. So, yeah, as you say, Park said afterwards that he picked up a glute injury and pulled out of training 2 days ago. I mean, Mitrovic hasn't been involved this year. I think we've all been aware of that. You know, it's sort of my understanding that I think Mitrovic probably won't want to hang around if Scott Parker remains as coach. And I don't think that's a surprise either, unless there's some kind of change there. And you know, it's a difficult one, and if you know, I mean, it's not been the season for him. And if it does end the sort of this way with him having been on the bench, not really been involved, and then sort of just shuffled out the side, it wouldn't really sit too well, I don't think. Which would be a great shame considering how important he's been for Fulham in recent years.
Yeah, indeed. Right, well, it was a positive point for Fulham, and certainly one that put a bit of pride back into the club after a difficult few weeks at Craven Cottage. We're going to take a break, and then afterwards we're going to look at the ding-dong at the top, Scott Parker versus the Fulham hierarchy.
This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now?
If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources, but therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Part two of the Fulhamish podcast. It's Sammy James here, and I'm still joined by Peter Rutzler. How you doing, Peter?
I'm all right. Where is Jack today, by the way? Is he just not bothered or?
No, so he's having bad internet issues. So he moved into a new flat, and I think it's a new build that he's bought his first flat, and it's got no internet. His hotspot's a nightmare. So he's basically living in the internet wilderness and has to commute back to his parents' house in order to get any kind of internet so that he can record the various podcasts that he does. So
so have we slipped down the pecking order now, Sammy? Is this
how Yeah. Very, very much so. We're about 7 out of 8 podcasts that that Jack does in his time. No, I think he
he'd have words, I think.
I think he maybe preempted that we were going to lose 8-0 and just thought he'd give this one a swerve, and actually may have been pleasantly surprised that Fulham actually managed to get a point. And who can blame him, quite frankly? Peter, we did the podcast last Thursday. We knew that there was a bit of unease between Scott Parker and Tony Khan, Shahid Khan, the Fulham hierarchy, as it were. And then what happened later on Thursday at his press conference, fair to say, blew up Fulham Twitter. you lit the match, and then the whole thing went kaboom.
Yeah, I mean, I was just trying to think what we said last time, because it seems quite a long time ago now.
Yeah, so much changes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the circumstances in terms of, I think we discussed what sort of Scott Parker and his team sort of frustrations were, and I don't think that's necessarily changed. I don't think that side of it has, but I think understandably too, there is a bit of disquiet from the hierarchy. I mean, that puts it mildly, considering how the feeling last week. I think about Parker not really sort of nailing his colours to the mast and sort of committing going forward, and also some comments. And I think he said in that press conference last week that he hadn't had conversations or spoken to the hierarchy.
He said, "I've not spoken to Tony or the ownership. I've not had that conversation yet." That they were the words that I think a lot of people just were almost incredulous about, that 3 days after relegation was confirmed against Burnley, people were kind of envisaging that Scott Parker's been waiting by the phone, waiting for it to ring, and it just hasn't.
Yeah, and my sort of understanding of why the hierarchy were upset was that Tony Khan had conveyed messages to Scott Parker through Alistair McIntosh. So the idea that there was no sort of dialogue wasn't necessarily true. Now, I think it's hard to say that there's been conversations. And when we start actually picking through the words of what is said, are we talking about a phone call? There hadn't been a phone call. That was my sort of understanding. What conversations were had? Have they spoken about next season? It doesn't really seem to be that way.
It just seems to me, Scott Parker says, "I haven't spoken to Tony or the ownership," and that seems fair enough. If Tony's sent a message through Alistair McIntosh, I still think that Scott Parker is correct in what he said. He hasn't spoken to Tony. Conveying a message, pick up the phone, Tony. That's what seems mad to me. Don't send a message through someone else. That's that.
Yeah, no, I do agree. And I mean, you know, there was, I think there was a sense that I think Shahid Khan, and sort of my understanding of his position was that he was actually quite upset with how the team had gone down, you know, and the fact that Fulham had actually put themselves in a position to survive and then actually passed it up. I think we almost got a hint of that in his sort of program notes, where he talks about how much it stung that those results against Leeds, Villa and Wolves, and you know, he still held out optimism that they could pull off something impressive. And his sort of position was to sort of, let's let the dust settle. I'll reach out to Scott, but then we'll regroup. And I think just the comments that came out in the media, what Scott said, clearly just sort of aggravated what have been, I think, some uncertainties. And I think we've talked about Scott Parker's sort of frustrations. I don't think he's tried to be subtle with what he said, but I, you know, we've talked about it, you know, in terms of he wants big decisions to be made in the summer. He's talked about club structure. He's talked about the director of scouting position and making sure that it's a position that's not filled. He's also talked about the issues of squad turnover and loans. I spoke last week about wanting to build a club culture, and to do that, you can't really do it with that high turnover. So I wonder, and I don't know this for sure, but I mean, it wouldn't be much of a stretch to see how much that may have been a frustration, coupled with the fact that Parker hasn't come out and said, I am staying next season, when, you know, my understanding is the club want him to stay. They want him to lead their Premier League push. He has 2 years left on his contract. So I think that's all at play. And then also the links to other teams. Obviously, there's been talk about Tottenham, you know, but I wonder how premature that is. I can't really see that happening. But obviously, Scott Parker, Matt Wells, and his first team coaching staff, Nathan Gardner and Charlie Moore, they're all from Spurs. So there is that tie. And I wonder, you know, and then the Bournemouth links, Oliver Kay on The Athletic wrote a good piece about how Bournemouth have been looking at Scott Parker for a while. He's talked about Bournemouth season. They've had a difficult campaign, but Scott Parker, sort of one of the key managers they earmarked as a replacement for Eddie Howe, and that view hasn't actually changed. So with all of that floating around, you can see why the hierarchy would get very frustrated with Parker. And then that said, you know, what Parker has come out and pointed to in terms of squad turnover and trying to build something for the longer term, I think they're valid points. I think we've discussed that. We've discussed, you know, that Fulham, in order to break their sort of yo-yo cycle, they need to have that sort of longer term strategy to build into the Premier League. And those discussions need to be happening. And then when you factor that in with the fact that, you know, that maybe there wasn't those conversations happening, I think that's upset quite a lot of supporters. And I think how it's perceived has had a role. And that's where that tension has come in. But I think now, fundamentally, I think we're sort of in a holding pattern. I think I wrote that in the piece today, where we're just waiting to see what Scott Parker comes out and says. And he's sort of said, you know, he's not going to commit until, well, he's not said that specifically, but he's not clarified, or doesn't look like he will clarify his position until after Sunday's match with Newcastle. So, you know, I think the ownership got a bit of heat for the situation. I think Parker's got a bit of heat for the whole situation. I don't think anyone's come out pretty well from it. I don't think it looks great either. But you know, it's one of those. I mean, is this lost time now that we're talking about here in this intervening period? I mean, it is three games in a week is the other factor. So I wonder if it's a case of, all right, let's get these games done and then we'll talk about it, which I think is understandable too. But yeah, my sort of opinion on it is it's all a bit unseemly. It's not the sort of transition you want after relegation. You'd want to start straight away going, right, let's build for next year. Let's look at that. And I guess we've seen that in the lineups. And I guess that's, if we're starting to sort of pick things out, I think Scott Parker spoken about looking forward to working with Fabio Carvalho. So I don't get the sense that it's like a total disconnect, but there evidently is one. And I think resolving that, whether that comes after Newcastle, will be an immediate priority as Fulham try to build back into the Premier League.
Well, yeah, but there have been a few noises from Parker, which kind of suggests that he has got an eye on next season. I thought what he said about the Tosin Adebayo rumours, which kind of you reported, and it was in the article that David Ornstein publishes in The Athletic, linking him to moves to Newcastle and Arsenal. And Parker said he doesn't need to go. He's a young player who is still improving and has loads to do. He's been fantastic for us. And of course, it's inevitable relegated teams see others come in for your better players, but he's under contract and I can't see him going anywhere. It doesn't necessarily scream I'm here next season, but it also does suggest to me Parker's not 100% out the door either.
Yeah, I think that's sort of it, Sammy. It's the this just goes back to a saying where there's not a total discount. I don't think doors are shut. You know, as I said, you know, the club want Parker to lead Fulham back into the Premier League, and I don't get the impression that they're going to sack him. So it's more in his core, I guess. And I guess looking at those sort of comments, you don't get the impression either that he's sort of decided he's completely off yet. The persistence of rumours elsewhere don't help things, I don't think. And it'd be interesting to see what sort of impact the tension of this past week has too. And I think I wrote in a column over the weekend that there has to be some kind of clear the air talks because of what's come out, and that the noise and the frustrations, and especially if Fulham want to go in the right direction. And there are a lot of other questions too, which we have discussed in terms of how does he bring some of these players back in from the fold? What does he actually want? Are there reassurances he's seeking? He hasn't actually said specifically about that other than loosely referencing big decisions and talking about structure. You know, these are all different elements that have got to be sort of welded together. And but you don't get the sense that that's not possible yet anyway.
No, indeed. All right, well, we're going to take another quick break, and then afterwards we'll look ahead to the return of Faz to Craven Cottage.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Part three of the Fulhamish podcast. Sammy here with Peter Rutzler. Peter, just wanted to start you off with a kind of mind-blowing stat about Fulham. 46% of our points this season have come against Liverpool, United, Spurs, Everton, Arsenal and Leicester. Just sums it up, really, and sums up such a topsy-turvy season where we've actually done so well against some of the bigger sides. You know, getting 13 points out of those clubs is a sensational return, but also just typifies how poor we've been in those games that really matter against bottom 10 sides.
Yeah, it's a bit wild, isn't it? I think I saw, was it Ben Jarman who replied to it, saying that, you know, 30% of Fulham's points have come in a week.
Yeah.
To the Fulhamish tweet, so... I think that sort of summed it up really, and it does show that Fulham can compete. Whether they just seem to get themselves up for the Lord Mayor's show on these big occasions is, you know, could be one thing. Bournemouth did that actually a little bit last year. They got some very good results. I think they beat Chelsea away, beat Man United at home, but then couldn't beat the teams around them and some of those key games against mid-table sides. It certainly underlines the frustration. I think what is interesting, and I know this ties into what we're going to talk about now, is just how poor Fulham have been at home. The lack of goals at Craven Cottage has been really quite stark. They've scored only 9 goals at the Cottage, the worst record at home of any top flight side, only 10 points. And that's probably been one of the key factors. You know, the way Fulham have sort of evolved in their tactical style, you know, being more counter-attacking, being more fluid, does suit sitting off against, does suit sitting off against, you know, some of these bigger teams going to Liverpool and to Everton. Although that said, I wouldn't say they sat off in those games. They certainly took it to them. But in terms of setup, it certainly, you know, it lends itself to playing in that way.
Which is all the more interesting going into next season, where Fulham definitely won't be able to do that. Where next season, there won't be really a single game where Fulham are on the back foot, hoping to hold on and nick points. So kind of, it is a style of play that's worked for Parker this year, but it 100% won't work in the Championship, where we'll be expected to be on the front foot and expected to take the ball to teams and probably have 70% possession in over half the matches.
Yeah, they'll have to be more positive. There's no doubt about that. And I do wonder about supporters in grounds, which is sort of what I was touching on. You know, not that they would have made, you can't really say they make a massive difference, but I think generally you tend to see away teams playing with a little bit more freedom. And I wonder if you get Fulham winning just two matches this season at the Cottage and scoring only 9 goals with supporters in there. You know, there have been games where games have just sort of drifted. I sort of think back to Brighton and Southampton over Christmas, and you know, the Wolves game where you need that goal but haven't been able to find the sort of the right tempo and energy to get it. And when fans did come in against Liverpool, I mean, that first half was electric, and not just from the noise that was created, but you know, the way in which it sort of raised the team and up there, they're pressing, and Liverpool couldn't get out of their own half. And now next season, of course, it's a different. I think expectations are different. There's less of that, right? We're underdogs and let's just go for them. And we want to see the team commit themselves well. It's there will be that different challenge. There will be that different, you know, obstacle of having to unpick teams, unpick locks, teams setting up defensively.
Yeah.
I do, when looking back, I do wonder what sort of impact that has had on Fulham. I mean, the thing is, it's easy to say that and it applies to every team. And, you know, the table doesn't lie. You know, everyone's in the same boat. And Fulham have come up short in that sense. But because Fulham have been so close, because they've had 13 draws, you do wonder if, you know, with a little bit of impetus, some of those could have been turned into wins, and that could have made this relegation fight a little bit tighter and maybe a different outcome.
I guess the only thing to say, I fully agree with fans at Craven Cottage, and particularly the kind of ground that Craven Cottage is. Fulham have always been a team that does well at home, and I know every team does well at home, but Craven Cottage has always felt like a place where Fulham are likely to get a result or two in an unlikely place. But I think that might be countered with the fact that I don't think, with fans at grounds, Fulham win at Goodison. I don't think Liverpool lose 6 in a row at Anfield, which probably means that Fulham don't win there as well. I feel like it might have balanced out. Interesting potential outcome with that stat as well about lack of goals at home, Peter. I believe that if Fulham fail to score against Newcastle on Sunday, it will be the lowest home goals tally ever in a Premier League season. Man City scored 10 in the 06-07 season under Stuart Pearce at the City of Manchester Stadium, as it was known then. And obviously Fulham have scored 9. So yeah, we need a goal to equal the record, and we need 2 goals to avoid breaking that awful record. I mean, how Man City managed to do that with fans is something else, really. So yeah, return of fans to Craven Cottage on Sunday, Peter, for the visit of Newcastle. And it's such a shame. This is a dead rubber, really, isn't it? Because we'd been talking about this. I think we spotted it in December, didn't we? We spotted it in December before the Newcastle game that we played up at St. James's Park, that they were in trouble and there is a possibility it could all come down to this final game, Fulham versus Newcastle, for a place in the Premier League. And whilst Newcastle are in 17th at the moment and Fulham are in 18th, there is a sizable gap that means that there is absolutely nothing riding on this game.
Yeah, it's a real shame, isn't it? I mean, it was set up for, you know, well, even when it was announced that fans would be coming back this week, you think, wow, that's only one game that's going to be included. Obviously, the penultimate week was moved back to get in on the action. But it was, you know, that was sort of the pinnacle, and always that sort of get out. You know, it's like, well, as long as Fulham are within 3 points, they'll be fine. And the fact that that hasn't happened, and it hasn't happened so emphatically, is really, really disappointing. I think, you know, we do think back to, obviously, to Anfield. Since Anfield, Fulham just haven't kicked on at all. And you compare that with what Newcastle have done since their defeat at Brighton, and it's you know, it's chalk and cheese. And it would have made for a really, really good game. That said, you know, it'll be interesting to see what sort of reaction the team get. I think from a supporter perspective, not actually seeing this Premier League season will be very, very strange. You know, coming, you know, I mean, obviously there was Liverpool, and obviously
it's Newcastle, but there's only 2,000 fans expected in the ground. So we're not talking about the majority actually getting to see that Premier League football, which is a great shame, really, because, you know, after such excitement at Wembley, not actually being able to share any moments, really, or not, the majority anyway, is a shame. And obviously, it'd be interesting to see what type of lineup Scott Parker goes for as well. Of course, there have been, you know, whether he plays some loanees, whether he plays more players who are contracted to the club next year. I think there are players there who've come in and done really well. You know, we've talked how well Joachim Andersen's done, Ademola Lookman, Mario Lemina, Alphonse Areola. Will fans get to see some of those players? Will those players themselves actually get to play in front of fans at the Cottage? You know, that's something that they would not have experienced on their time at the club too. So that'll be an interesting sort of dynamic. And I don't know what you feel about it, Sammy, what sort of team you would want to see if you're on the terraces this weekend.
I think it would be nice to see a few of the players that have impressed this year. And I think that includes some of the loanees. I don't imagine that Loftus-Cheek would get a particularly great reaction given how that loan move has worked. And whilst Joachim Andersen and Alphonse Areola aren't going to be here next year, I believe they deserve a send-off in front of fans. And so Andersen didn't play yesterday against United, or at least he didn't start. He did come on as a sub later on. I think it would be nice for someone like Andersen to get to play a good chunk of the game in front of the fans. And I think a player like him and another player like Areola, Lemina would definitely be in this category as well. I think deserve that send-off. Lookman as well. So I'd like to see a near full strength side, but with that nod to the future as well. I'd like to see Joey Bryan in there. I'd love to see Fabio Carvalho get a run out in front of fans. I think he'll get a terrific reception. And I guess the really interesting one, Peter, and I swear I always hark back to the M word, is does Mitrovic get to play one final game in front of fans at Craven Cottage? I think he, out more than anyone, has missed the fans this season. I do just think he really thrives off a crowd. He always seems to, and particularly at Craven Cottage, he really... You saw him rise when he would score a goal, and he would just grow 2 feet taller with that crowd. So I'd like to see him also get a nod, but I don't know if that quite fits in with what Parker's thinking.
I agree. He has that sort of visceral connection, doesn't he, with supporters. And, you know, it'll be interesting what Parker says about this injury, previewing the game later in the week. You know, I think if he can play, he should be involved, considering where things are in terms of where he's sort of, what his sort of stance is at the moment and what Parker's stance is at the moment and all that uncertainty. So, yeah, I think considering all of that, it'd be good to at least see him feature. What kind of reception do you think Scott Parker will get, considering, you know, obviously he's not had the, you know, sort of adulation for the promotion? And obviously he's now coming back into it with the supporters for relegation. So how do you see that playing out?
I would imagine fairly warm. Like I still think a silent majority of Fulham fans still back Parker. I know that there is an ever-growing discontent against him online, and I think there are certainly questions about some of his tactics, especially in the last 2 months, and some of the football has been really turgid and awful. And I still think, though, there is a general depth of good feeling amongst the fan base. I'd be surprised if there's much negativity, really, on Sunday. I imagine those that are going because they want to return to live football. I think there's been a real controversy about the ticket price for this. It's £40 for a game that means absolutely nothing. And whilst you could maybe give the club the benefit of the doubt that this could have been a big game and therefore worth the £40 ticket price, if any ticket is ever worth £40. But considering it is a dead rubber, I think there's been a lot of negativity about it. I'm not going on Sunday. I mean, I don't think I had the opportunity because I didn't get the ballot for either Brighton or Liverpool. But even if I did have the opportunity, I think I'd have thought twice before paying £40 for a completely meaningless game that I could just watch on the TV. But I think those that are going will just be missing live football and probably want to show a little bit of appreciation to a team that has valiantly tried, if being quite flawed at several times this season.
I think it's interesting also just looking at how the United fans responded at Old Trafford last night. Obviously, there's a lot of discontent there towards the Glazer family, and that was evident, that was there, but there was also a lot of enthusiasm, there was a lot of excitement that was very difficult to contain. And I think once you get back inside the ground, and I think when supporters also see the Riverside Stand development and how much that's changed, how much the cottage is changing, I think I would be very surprised if it would be negative. So it'd be great for me too, just to see fans in there again. Obviously, I had that brief experience at the Liverpool game, and
yeah,
as soon as we can get full crowds in again, the better.
Yeah, and I can't wait to see all your photos of the Riverside Stand. at me on Twitter, at Mr. Sammy James. I will give
with,
you...
With fans back, is that now a redundant exercise, you know, or do I keep going?
No, you know, keep going, Peter. Keep winding up the masses with your endless photos of the Riverside Stand. I think it needs to be done. well, look, thank you very much for listening today. Some positivity on the podcast. Who'd have thunk it, eh? After the kind of miserable few weeks that we've had. But Joey Bryan puts a smile on our face. Shock. Peter, thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
No, thank you, Sammy. You know, it's a pleasure. I'll always step up for duty, unlike Mr. Collins.
Well, hopefully he gets his internet fixed very soon. Congrats to Jack Taplin for the podcast name today, Theatre of Reams. And we'll be back on Sunday after that Newcastle game, reacting to the match and what it's like with fans inside Craven Cottage again. If you're going on Sunday, enjoy it. Enjoy the day out. Yes, the match doesn't mean much, but I'm sure you'll absolutely love the feeling of being back inside the hallowed turf at Craven Cottage. So thank you for listening today, and come on, you Whites.